When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Roderick. Is there anything that Lionel Messi is better than you at?
It's opinion. I respect your opinion. Maybe in your opinion, Messi is better than me. But in my mind, I'm better than him. I do it again.
Everything is on me, gon' back it up.
Matter what?
Told you I'ma do me, why you hating on me? It's not adding up. I do roll like a Mack truck. Country heart, I'ma cop a farm and gon' act up. Like scars, I was cold hearted, now I'm back up. Keep it real, I do this once a month, I don't rap much. I just hit the money and go stack up. I'ma buy a car, hard car, car, take it, tat it up. All that other bull, it don't matter much. You only climb me, I put the ladders up.
No fault. I done doubled up on the workload. I think I fell in love with the bankroll. Pray up, get money, then we lay low.
Then we lay low.
Add it up, bankroll, euro, peso,
peso.
Add it up, I'm just doing me. Everything is on me. Oh, you matter what? Add it up,
Yes, guys, I'm Si. Welcome to Ace Podcast Nation. Welcome to Rodri Gigs on Football. We're live on Ace Podcast Nation YouTube, Twitter, and I think we're live on Instagram as well. If someone wants to check that, then crack on. But it looks like it's all good, which is a new thing for us, new thing for StreamYard. Always moving on, as we like to do. Like to evolve, make things better, try new things. And, of course, if you listen to the audio versions, then, of course, we're on the Sports Social Podcast Network. So check us out on there. Spread the word. All that good stuff. I am delighted to be joined by another well-known face in the world of football for the second night in a row. But this one is, he's been everywhere. Ex-Salford City, FC United, Mosley, Bangor City, Aberystwyth Town.
Kirsten Ashton.
There we go. Oh, wait, there's always one more. There's always one more, at least. It's Mr. Roderick Giggs.
I've never ever said Kershaw. I just did that because you named them all. But yeah, I was only there for a year.
Getting good, mate. Getting remembering all of them. There's so many. I've got to write them down. But yeah, how are you, my friend? You good?
Yeah, good, yeah.
Lots to discuss, mate. Lots to discuss. So we'll get like straight into it. We haven't done it for a couple of weeks for a variety of reasons. Obviously, we do the Super Six Prediction League for charity and the Fantasy Football League for charity. And it's been a very interesting week. Now that Rodri's had a good week, we have to start talking about it again. It's part of his deal. He's got to be bigged up every week. He's got to boost his ego, you see. But when I was smashing him, I felt like the weeks before, it's like, oh, we don't talk about that. But anyway, you know, I'm not bitter. Fantasy Premier League. Prince Evie had the highest individual score
this week. That either.
with 79 points, but Pete McIlroy is top of the table with 1,053 points. Oh, my days. I can tell you I'm no any of that for a start. Super 6, Kelly Beckley, Jamie Richards Knight, and James Costley top the round with 14 points apiece. Caroline Cartwright is top of the league overall. How is my battle with Rodri going? It's a close one in the Super 6. Rodri is back a point ahead, so he's 178 to my 177. He scored 6 this week. I scored 4. The Fantasy Premier League, though, is not as close. Rodri's on 829. I'm on 730. The next round of both is 3 o'clock on the 23rd of December.
By the way, that FPL, when I started a month ago, you was above me.
I admit, we've had this. I don't do it, do I? Like, I don't pay attention to it.
Yeah.
It's for charity, mate. Come on. You're better than that.
All right. Super 6. Just playing
Playing with me. I just had to give you a little bit of a comeback because you were sulking, weren't you, after the other week when you wouldn't respond to my texts.
Absolute toying with you.
Well, when I won last week, you wouldn't even respond to my text for a couple of days. Like, I got a bit insulted, you know, because you were crying away. What text? Yeah, that's it, isn't it? Right,
that was last week. That was...
Yeah, doesn't matter. Is it? History, mate. History,
that was Channel 529 on the Sky, Channel.
We're not Arsenal fans here. We don't talk history all the time. We talk about the now. Mate, on that subject, there is like so much to talk about this week. It's quite mad. I want to talk about, first of all, Tom Locklear being discharged from hospital after a cardiac arrest. Obviously, that's good news that he's been discharged. Look, from a humane point of view and like human point of view, I wish him nothing but the best, mate, and I hope he goes on to live a long and happy life with his family and stuff. Without knowing any of the details, I think from the outside he probably isn't going to play football again, simply because if you have two cardiac arrests in the space of less than 12 months, I'm not sure that you're going to be able to carry on playing sport at a professional level. But I don't know. I'm not part of the decision.
He's been lucky, really, for him to happen twice.
You know, mate. Yeah, you know, big time. And you know what? You could tell by the reaction of the players to the most recent one. Like, soon as they knew it was him, who had gone down and wasn't really, like, moving to, you know, he had gone down weird and wasn't moving. Like,
it's the way players, you go down, you don't face plant like that, do you?
No. And they, you know, that everyone was straight on. And, like, the manager, he looked... You could tell, like, it was a very emotional period. You know, they've been through it before. And, it's not nice, mate. Not nice at all. You never know. Like, I didn't expect him to come back.
Ericsson would have come back, but pacemaker, they identified the situation properly. Who knows? With modern science, just hope it's the right decision. And, you know, the main thing that he's all right.
Yeah, look, touch wood, mate, that him, Ericsson, Locklear, all of them have no further problems and they go on and live happy and long lives. Look, there's more to life than football at the end of the day, mate.
Good coaching career for Locklear.
Yeah, I mean, Tom Locklear, mate, I don't know if you've seen him. I've seen him do a couple of media things. He's very, very good speaker. He's very intelligent. Puts his point across in like a clear and concise way. So I would imagine there's a job in the media for him as well. But also, I think he could probably go and do some good in, you know, youth football, talking to youth players as well, because regardless of the reasons why and stuff like this that people all want to speculate on, which I'm not interested in speculating on, but we are seeing professional athletes around the world sort of having these types of medical emergencies. And ultimately, I think making young footballers, young athletes aware of what to do in that situation, how to cope with it, I think is not a bad thing, because it's like professional sport is it's so close to the red line of health, and like they're pushing everything in there, every little limit of every little thing in all professional sports to get that edge and to be the best. So I don't think it would be the worst thing to educate academies, staff, the rest of it, you know, even more in terms of how to deal with it, what to do, stuff like that. But Yeah, look, I'm just happy that at the moment it looks like he's, you know, he's been discharged from hospital, and he's, you know, hopefully he makes a full recovery and everything's good. On a less positive story, it was ruled in court today that UEFA cannot stop Super League because it goes against workers' rights and things like this. What has been fascinating to watch is all these clubs scrambling over themselves to put out statements saying, no, we don't want nothing to do with it, which is quite the opposite to when it first reared its head. What was it? Probably about 18 months, 2 years ago, where you had a group of clubs who kind of had gone, done it on the sly and proposing it. Some of those clubs are now saying, nope, not interested. I was very interested to see, obviously, your club, United, was one of the first clubs to say, put a statement out there, Statement FC this year, isn't it? It's like a couple of statements a week on various things. But what do you make of it, mate? What do you make of it? I just think it's a non-starter now because...
They tested the water. The water was too hot for him. Far too hot. So, you know, they're on rewind now. So, and you've seen that with the quick statements saying, no, we want nothing to do with it. So... You know, they test the water with the fans, and the fans spoken, basically. If you have no people in your ground, just like another pandemic, COVID, it's not really good, is it?
Yeah, it's...
That's what would have happened. It would have been good for them. So, and that's everyone, because it was... widely said by all around the English fans that were nominated, it was not going to happen, not on their watch and not on our watch. And so, yeah. Adios, Super League.
Yeah, it's a non-starter. Without the Premier League clubs, I believe it's a non-starter. Without the Munichs, the Uniteds, the rest of it, like, it's just a non-starter anyway. But it's good to see, I suppose, that the Premier League or certain clubs have kind of put a kibosh on it straight away. Because then it's not like just in the background all the time, I suppose. However,
the quick statement might have come from Jim Bradcliffe. He might be in there now, and he might have, you know, kiboshed it straight away. Let's be one of the first ones out there. Nah, this ain't happening.
So then what happens if it's the other way around? What happened? Not that I believe this for a second. Maybe it's the Glazers. You know, they want to change their ways. They want to.
Of course, they don't care about the club. They just want the money. Said this was a more. A better money stream for him, or another alley of a money stream for him, then they were going to take it because they don't care. They're 2,000 miles away.
Yeah, they're in it for the cash, mate, don't they? On testing the water, mate, and it being too hot, I read some interesting stories the last couple of days, hot off the back of his performances for Getafe. Mason Greenwood has been heavily linked with staying at United or coming back to United, and Sancho going. But I think it was, I said to you, didn't I, when he went on loan, the way they worded it in all their statements, the door was like open. They never said he was leaving permanently. It was just that he was leaving to sort himself out and blah, blah, blah. And I said at the time, if he goes out to Getafe, scores a shitload of goals and plays really well, there's not a chance that United will sell him to X, Y, and Z. They just won't. And I know that will upset people, and people will have their opinions on it, and people will say, no, he should never play for United again. The fact is, if he keeps playing like he has done in the last month, 2 months, for the whole season, next season, or in the start of next season, he will play for United. He'll be in that starting lineup. It's just a fact. Football, it's a business. And from a football point of view, they would be stupid to get rid of him. It's just the way it is, like, to me anyway. Do you see it any different?
I just think that the timing's all wrong for this new person to be coming in. We're January in the first. One of the first things he does is bring back. Doesn't look good for him. I would bring him back in. He wouldn't even gone for me. So,
I don't think he comes back till the summer, but I think he comes back now.
We'll have to wait and see because, you know, Real Madrid and Barcelona are sniffing now. So he might want to go there. I think, you know what, fuck that, I'm going there.
I suppose it will come down from his point of view.
Like,
I suppose
it's not playing for a scrub. It's playing for the two best teams in the country.
Yeah, Munich have been linked with him as well. So I mean, if you look at it purely from a football point of view, right, I think there's two sides which will come into it. One is clearly he's getting he's not getting as much hassle from the media if he goes to Spain or Italy or Germany, wherever it may. If he comes back to the Premier League, it's going to be constant. We saw that documentary with Beckham and the way they go about chasing these players around. And then the second side of it, from his point of view, will be, is he happy with how United dealt with him? Was he on board with them sending him to loan to Getafe? You know, was that a good thing for in his eyes? Or did he feel like the club let him down and hung him out to dry a bit? If it was the latter, then why wouldn't he go and play for Barcelona, Madrid, whoever, if they want him? Do you see what I mean? Yeah. If he feels that the club backed him and they did the right by him, then I could see why he would stay there if he thinks he can deal with the media side of it. And look, I'm not talking about the ins and outs of the moral thing of whether he should play or not. I'm just looking at it from a purely, if United go to him and say, we want you to stay, he'll have a decision to make, because it sounds like there's going to be a few clubs interested. But I don't know. I know, like you said, you think they should bring him back. So, you know, everyone's got an opinion on it. It's one of those things where everyone has an opinion on it, but ultimately it'll be Manchester United, Mason Greenwood, whoever, who make the decision. The fans, right, they might have a say in it, like they kicked up a bit of a fuss and stuff, but I'm trying to look at it from a football point of view because I'm bored of talking about the morals of football and the rest of it. It's kind of, I'm fed up with talking about it till blue in the face. But if you look at it from a football point of view, it makes sense. Roy Keane, Manchester United legend, called Premier League legend, called Virgil van Dijk.
Premier League legend.
Premier League legend, Roy Keane, isn't he?
I'm more up going on the latter.
Who?
Who are you going to say now? Premier League legend.
Oh, I wasn't talking about Virgil van Dijk. Jesus Christ, he's had one good season, mate.
All right, yeah,
so Roy Keane, Premier League legend, Manchester United legend, called Virgil van Dijk arrogant after his post-match interview after the 0-0 draw between United and Liverpool. I want to get your immediate sort of take on, did you think, when you saw that interview, did you see it before you saw the Keane reaction? Or did you see the Keane reaction first and then sort it out?
Yeah.
Did you think that Van Dijk was particularly, like, what he said was wrong or arrogant or whatever?
Not arrogant, it's just naive to think that, no. Even when United were a very good team, they were very, 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 very cautious to go into Anfield in the first 15, 20 minutes, quiet the crowd down, and then just go from there. But you can't go gung-ho at Anfield, especially with half your team out and not in good form up against it. Last time you were there, you got beat 7-0. So there's bad memories. And they've gone there and dug in and defended and could have nicked it in the end. But, yeah, it's naive to say that. And just, he's obviously annoyed and having a little dig, but, you know, when you're up there, that's what you've got to expect. I've watched that many, many, many times, week in, week out, year in, year out. When I used to watch United, been good teams, you just sit in and try and get them on the counter attack. So, yeah, it's part and parcel of being a top club, Virgil, but obviously you've not been experienced that enough with the naive quote you said or comment you said in the interview.
I just thought he was... I thought it was like a bit stupid, right? I agree with you, he's really naive, because of course United are going to go there and defend for their lives. They're in terrible form, they got loads of players missing.
What's the respect to go gung-ho and get beat 6-2?
If Scott McTominay is your captain, like on the day, like you know that they're kind of struggling for players and tactics and whatever. So of course they're going to defend for their life. I thought United defended very well. I thought they looked a lot better with Mainoo and Amrabat as the two holding midfielders, because one of the big, like I've said to you many times, one of the biggest problems United have had all season is that they just get run through in the midfield areas, and they weren't, or they didn't, that didn't happen as much. And it's up to the home side, particularly in these big sides, it's up to the home side to, you know, to break teams down, and teams are going to sit in against you and try and get a point. And you could argue United had the better chances. I thought the last, the Garnacho one and the Hoyland one were big chances away, you know. On another day, United could have nicked a 1-0 win, which is weird. But I thought Liverpool had an off day as well. But I just thought, he, in relation to his comments, I thought he was playing up to the fans a little bit, trying to show that, you know, I'm frustrated and we're having a little dig at United. But it's like, come on, what do you expect United to do? Play 4-2-4 and try and win 6-5? Never going to happen.
Never. Yeah, he's obviously rubbed Roy up the wrong way. And no, we know Roy speaks his mind, and he's probably correct in his statement. So,
yeah, I mean, he wasn't happy, was he, Roy Keane? But here's a question for you, mate. Right, what
Dutch people aren't necessarily, you know, what's the word? The opposite to confident. What's the opposite to confident?
Not like shy.
Yeah, they're not really shy, are they, the Dutch?
No, they're quite straight talking, and they, like, yeah, exactly. They say quite.
Yeah, and literally, they kind of rub people the wrong way, like Germans, really, Dutch people.
Yeah, they're quite literal in the way they speak a lot of the time, aren't they? And I didn't think what he said was outrageous. I didn't think what he said was outrageous, because, like, what he said wasn't massively incorrect. United didn't really. You know,
I've seen matches against United where the people defended, and that team have nicked a point on 1-1-0.
Yeah,
where United battered them all. So that it could have been worse. So,
well,
this is what I mean. He's very naive and obviously not experienced this week in, week out, year in, year out. It's been sporadic, and he's had it a couple of years here, then a couple of years off, and then obviously got an injury, and where. You know, Keane that experience for like 10 years, solid, probably more. But yeah, he's obviously not experienced enough. And it's an amateur comment, a novice comment.
Mm-hmm. Novice. Just quickly then on United, obviously, Varane came back into the side. I thought he made a big difference. I thought there were some big performances. Kobbie Mainoo for an 18-year-old is madness, mate, I tell you.
Yeah, liked him as we watched the FA Youth Cup a couple of years ago. Garnacho scored a couple and they won against Sheffield United. Anyway, there was Garnacho and Coleman were really impressed with that day. Not so much Garnacho, but he scored the two goals, and he was dangerous. But that Coleman, I thought, he's a player. I mean, he's only 16 at the time. But he's going to be a good player.
Yeah, it's just the calmness on the ball, mate, is crazy for someone so young. And I think, you know, like, I was looking at that United side, and I think a big problem with the Hoyland thing is they're not giving him service. And then I was thinking, God, if you took McTominay out and put Bruno in there against other teams, so not against Liverpool at Anfield, but, like, you know, they got West Ham at the weekend with Bruno and Mainoo and Amrabat in the midfield and Varane back and fit. United might be able to get a bit of consistency, because I thought even amongst that defensive display, you know, the ball from Mainoo to Garnacho behind the fullback, Trent Alexander, I criticised him a lot for his defensive liabilities, does really, really well because he's a couple of yards, Garnacho's got half a yard on him. And Trent gets his body across him really quickly, because if Garnacho takes it, if his first touch takes him across Trent Alexander, it's either he brings him down or Garnacho gets his shot off. And I thought Trent did very, very well to make sure that didn't happen.
One touch as well. He needed a better touch.
Yeah, he did. And it was a great ball by Mainoo, which shows that he's not only got the composure for the, you know, to keep the ball moving and do the basics, it's that vision as well. And I thought even the Hoyland one, I thought the build-up, if you watch the build-up to that Hoyland chance, they start with the key, it starts with Onana. They build all the way up the pitch, through the press, little 1-2 on the edge of the box. If Hoyland hits that anywhere, but straight, it's in. But he goes for power and, you know, the keeper does well. But on another day, you know, he scuffs that and it goes in the corner, or he hits it high and it goes in the net. It's just, it's kind of one of those things. But I thought that game, at least, I thought there were some positives in it amongst that performance by United that you could build on. Do you agree with that, or do you still think that they're going to struggle?
No, it's looked promising. Even against Bayern Munich, looked more solid. They've just got to, you know, they've just got to get the right balance, because obviously when they're creating more chances, they look open at the back. But look, they've looked a lot more solid. And they get more players back. See what can happen in January. And it's obviously going to be players out as well. Hopefully try and get... It's never works well in January, but still we've got players getting back from injury. And yeah, take it from there and see what happens.
I think if they could get Martinez back now over Christmas, and I think if they can get McTominay out of the starting 11, I just think that then United will be in a position to push on in the second half of the season. People forget like how many players they've had out in the first half of the season. If they get all their players back in the second half of the season, it's going to be like having two or three new signings anyway. I want to talk about the Championship, mate, because it's hotting up at the top of the league. Leicester, who, you know, have been, they've lost three all season, drawn one, won four of the last five. But Ipswich have also lost, won four of the last five. And they're only 3 points behind Leicester. And then there's a big gap. There's 10-point gap then to Leeds. Do you think Ipswich and Leicester will run away with it? Or do you think there's any way Leeds can...
Ipswich play Leeds this weekend, don't they?
Let me just double check. I think it's, yeah, Leeds at home to Ipswich Town tomorrow lunchtime.
Yeah, Saturday so, lunchtime. Yeah, so it's a big game. Now they can bring it back into it, or they can strengthen it more. Where is it? At Ellen Road?
Yeah. Big game, that, isn't it? Keira McKenna doing a blinding job, mind. I've got to say, been really impressed with his coaching. I think I said to you...
We've seen that before, though, haven't we, where teams get promoted and they use it as a slingshot or as a slipstream to keep that momentum going, add a bit more quality. They've obviously got team, good team spirit. And yeah, we've seen it with Ipswich Town. And obviously, they keep on... Obviously, it's still early, but no, if they win on Saturday, it's a big statement that getting a result at Elland Road. So we'll have to wait and see. But it's a big game from that. If they win that, then they're rocking and rolling. If Leeds win it, then, you know, they can bring them closer to them and even bring them into it, like a three-horse race. So we've only two spaces. But
well, I was just looking then. Like Southampton are on 42 as well, actually. So there's actually two teams within 10 points of Ipswich, and then there's another bit of a drop.
So, these are no scrubs either. These are two strong sides in the Premier League last year. So
experienced sides as well.
And a rocky start, but obviously have got going now. You probably bet on them having a pretty good second half of the season. And I that's who my money would be on for Southampton. But you know, Leeds looking strong as well, even though they had a couple of blips in the last week or so. But no, it's a big game for Ipswich. Game for Leeds as well.
Yeah, I can't remember if I said this on the show or if I said it to you privately, but like, out of all the teams Cardiff have played this year, Ipswich is the team which I've been most impressed with. Even Leicester, I thought because Cardiff were unlucky against Leicester. They had a chance just before Leicester scored, didn't take it. And then Leicester got like a really scrappy goal, which kind of pinballed around the area. Whereas I thought Ipswich just looked so good on the ball, so good off the ball, very structured. But the football they played was sensational. And I've been really, really impressed with them. But like you mentioned, like sometimes teams which come up from League One, they just keep that momentum. I think even Sunderland, they didn't go up. But last year, you know, they were in and around the playoffs. Just that momentum of winning football matches kind of carries on, even though you're going up a level and the games are harder. And it's just that winning becomes a habit very easily. Well, not easily, but once you're winning, it becomes just the norm, doesn't it?
No. Obviously, in good form, like I say, good team spirit, you can't beat a good team spirit. They've obviously kept most of the team that have got them up. And yeah, it's showing that this year, because it's not easy, the Championship, as you know. No, it's relentless. And they're doing really, really well.
Ole Gunnar Solskjaer's coaches doing very well, mate, aren't they? Since he left United, Carrick is doing well at Borough, which we're going to talk about Borough in a minute. Obviously, we had the EFL Cup games going this week. But, I mean, you know, Carrick's doing a very good job at Borough. McKenna doing a good job at Ipswich. And I think there's actually, I can't remember who the third guy is, but I think the other coach is doing pretty well somewhere as well. Forget who it is. He's coming together slowly. Do you think Wayne Rooney? Where are Birmingham? Let's have a look. 17th. Didn't follow up on that victory over Cardiff. Unfortunately for them, what they would have liked to have done is, you know, get that victory away at Cardiff, which is a difficult game.
I was going to say Cardiff's a chance, but if they win one game, they go up 5 places.
So. I mean, it's insane, the Championship, isn't it? Like, it is literally any team can beat anyone on their day. And you if you win 2-3 games, you go up the table so fast. But, you know, from a Cardiff point of view, the biggest thing now is to stop the rot, is stop the bad form. They need to, first and foremost, just grind out a result or two over Christmas. They got Sheffield Wednesday, Saturday, which I've got a preview for that dropping tomorrow. But Sheffield Wednesday is at Hillsborough. Even though Wednesday have been very poor this year, like Cardiff have just got to find a way, because Cardiff have been dreadful the last 5 games. They just have to get the points and then they can build on performances. But you just got to grind it out, mate, haven't you, when you're playing poorly? Just got to find a way.
Got to work through it, mate. It's the only way you can get through it. Not feeling sorry for yourself, just got to work through it.
Hard work. So last night I had Darren Whitcoop on, who's the Sunday Mirror sports editor. He's sort of one of the real main transfer journalists for the EFL. And that was really interesting speaking to him. He had a few things to say about what he'd heard about Cardiff and Kiefer Moore. Seems like every man and their dog thinks that that's a done deal. But he also talked about Callum Robinson potentially leaving Cardiff in January, which was, I was very surprised at. But when I thought about it afterwards, he fell out with a manager earlier in the season. He's on very high wages. And Reuben Corwell, who's young and Welsh, has taken his starting place recently and done all right. So maybe it doesn't make, you know, it's one of them where you didn't necessarily think about it straight away or like I'd sell him. But actually, it would be a surprise.
If doing that, you can bring in Kiefer Moore, then you'd do it, wouldn't you?
Yeah, you've got to. Kind of crying out for a striker. So, like, all the strikers they've got are very, very much the same. They're not at that level that you really need. Kiefer Moore is proven in the Championship, played international football. You know, when he gets a run of games and he's fit and he's sharp, he is capable of playing the wake. Yeah, he fits the system. It's a no-brainer for me. But I guess we'll see. Do you think we don't normally see many big moves in the Premier League in the January window. I know you get like a couple, maybe loans and short-term deals, but do you think we'll start with United? Do you think United will bring anyone in January?
Yes.
I think, if they only bring in one player, what position would you like to see him strengthen if you're only bringing in one?
Got to say a striker.
Yeah, I think...
But it's so hard to get a striker. So either that or centre half.
So yeah, I agree.
Like Veranza, it looks like Veranza is where I'm reading today at Real Madrid. Looking at him. So.
Yeah, well, what's his head? Got a long term injury, haven't he? The centre back. I've forgotten his name.
Yeah, so you could see that they know him. No, he's not over the hill. He's still 29, 30. He's not as physical.
He's only 30, isn't he? I thought he was older than that.
He's only 30. He's not as physical. You know, he's back where he knows. So that you could see that happening.
Yeah, United have been linked with that Todibo, haven't they, from Nice, which obviously with the Jim Ratcliffe connection, you could see that how that might end up happening. He's a very good defender, mind. But what's interesting to me is with Varane, is like, I thought in my head, for some reason, I thought he was like mid-30s. He's literally not long-term.
Yeah, he's just turned 30.
But I think the problem is the intensity of the Premier League, he can't play game
week in. He's physical, isn't he? So it's brittle, French bones.
But quality, mate, that it, like, you look at the difference he made on the weekend against Liverpool.
You won't win Champions Leagues at French side that he's been in. Come on, he's a top player.
Yeah, he's probably he was in the World Cup winning side as well, wasn't he? Yeah, he must have been.
Yeah.
But I think from that United transfer thing, I think whilst I think they need a centre back, if they were only able to bring in one player because of FFP and stuff like that, I think a striker would be more beneficial simply because they have got centre backs who can play for the rest of the season. Whereas there's so much pressure on Højlund at the moment. They're not getting the service to him, but there's nobody else because Martial is just not, it's not worth the bloody shirt he's got. So like they were linked with that. What's his name? From the Middle Eastern striker. I've forgotten his name. I will find it out now. Who's got a really good scoring record. And I think he was available cheap, but he's very experienced. And I think like he would be a good shout. Someone who's experienced but can score, like hit the ground running, I think would be a massive benefit to Højlund. Because I still think Højlund starts, but if you've got someone on the bench who can score goals and get in the right positions, it just eases the pressure on him a bit, doesn't he? Because he must look at the bench now and think, Jesus, if I don't score, like, well, there's no one to come on, like, you know? Martial's... I can't even believe he's still there, mate, to be honest. I'm trying to think of what his name is. It's going to bug me, that is. It's going to bug me. That's Adebo, though, who's been linked with United and Spurs, is very, very good. He's been linked with Spurs heavily the last 24 hours or so. But
it's just been linked with United for... We've got so many injuries, so just need to get some of them back.
Yeah, and Manchester United have been very secretive over their how long players are out for at the moment. Like they used to, you know, you'd have a clear sort of timeline of what the injury was, how long they're out for, etc. But like, you know, how long is Harry Maguire out for? How long is Martinez out for? Until, you know, it's difficult to judge what they need if you don't know how long these players.
Harry Maguire looked like he twinged his groin, so that's a couple of weeks, a few weeks at least. So, and Martinez has been out for a while now, so I'd expect him back training, isn't he? Yeah, he's back training. So you'd expect him back later in the month or early next year. So, yeah, there's two massive people coming back, but we just need to get everyone back. People go, obviously, look, Van der Beek looks like he's on his way out. Where's he going? Is it the Dutch league?
Yeah, Dutch league. Do you know what was really interesting is, if United get all their players, say United had all their players back tomorrow from injury, it would be like having two or three new signings, which shows like how many injuries they've got. Casemiro's been linked with Saudi. They'll have a decision to make with him, really. Like
Amrabat as well. I'm hearing there's a clause in his contract where they can just let him go back. I don't know if that's a weird one,
because like he's probably disappointed a little bit since he's come in, but I don't think he hadn't had a pre-season or anything. So I think it's just taking him a bit of time, isn't it?
Good games and you've seen bad games, but that's because he's not played and obviously new league, new team. So you would usually say when a player comes to Manchester United, you know, he's given time, let him settle in. Mm. And with Amrabat, we've not done that. We've gone, oh, he's fucking, you know, he's not doing this, he's not doing that. And it's probably a bit harsh.
Yeah, I think actually, you know, if Casemiro was to go to Saudi in January, they have to keep Amrabat, don't they? They can't let both of them go, I would have thought. Because then you're back to that where you were a couple of years ago with no holding midfielder, which is not the ideal situation. I tell you an interesting transfer story we were reading this morning. David De Gea to Newcastle. That makes a lot of sense, I think, with Pope out. I know he's on a lot of money, but I mean, let's be honest, Newcastle can, you know, they've got a bottomless pit, haven't they?
Yeah, in terms they don't have to pay a fee, you just come straight in, it's just a wage, it'd be a big wage, but be worth it. Top keeper, come in straight away.
Yeah, and I think, look, regardless of how his form dipped last year, as a shot stopper...
He's still been United's best player over the 10 years.
Yeah, and as a shot stopper, I don't think there's many better keepers around. Like,
he has been the best player of one of the biggest clubs in the world for the last 10 years. So that says a lot of the Manchester United side, of the players that they've brought in, but still no mean feat.
Oh, mate, I nearly forgot. What did you make of the Diogo Dalot sending off?
Yeah, these referees are really irritating me. Really irritating me. There's no need for it.
I saw a journalist, I forget his name, I apologise, but he basically tweeted on the Monday after. He said, what has happened is Michael Oliver has let his emotions get the better of him. Like, he has got irritated by the way Dalot reacted, and he's let his emotions get the better of him, and he's reacted emotionally by booking him twice. And I think I wouldn't have a problem with him booking him twice if, in the first half, when Nunes rams an elbow into Johnny Evans's chest, then he kicks the ball away, then he gets in the linesman's face, and then he sarcastically claps the linesman, but he only gets one yellow card. Whereas really, if you wanted to break it down technically, he did four things that would warrant a yellow card. So if he had sent off, or if he had given two yellow cards to Nunes in the first half for that, and then sent off Dalot for two lots of dissent, then I think you could justify that with consistency, etc. However, by not doing the one and then doing the other, I think it just makes the referee look inconsistent, childish.
What the problem you've got with some of these referees, and Mike Oliver, for me, was one of the good referee, but what's happening is his ego is taking over. And just because someone's made a reaction to how bad his decision was, which it was the wrong one, it should have been United throwing. And there was no need. And it's the way he's reacting, he's going, get off. Is this to say? It's just, his emotions have took over. He's not been professional. He could have given me a yellow card and say, listen, calm down, or you're going to go again. Not just go yellow, and then act like a petulant child saying, get off. It was just...
He reminded me of Clattenburg.
These referees have egos now, and their egos are taking over of being a good referee. And Mike Oliver, for me, is a good referee, but that was a bad decision. Right at the end of the game, it's a big game for United. They defended really well, and that could have put a spanner in the works, all because one referee didn't like the one player's reaction. You book him, you say to him, right, now enough, stop, or you're going to go, not let your emotions take over and book him in the space of 5 seconds. It's pathetic. And like you said, earlier in the game, Nunes could have had three or four yellow cards, but he only got one. It's double standards. We see it every week. There's no consistency because they all have egos, or one referee sees it this way or sees it that way. Different laws changing, the handball. But these referees are poor. I mean, the capital P, poor.
Let me ask you a question, Ahmed. Do you think it's his ego, his emotions, the rest of it? Or do you think it's because he's a diehard Newcastle fan, which he is?
No.
It's a Newcastle fan.
Emotions, ego took over. Why would you give him two yellow cards? Because he's done that and then done that again. You're a professional, very experienced referee, and you're acting like a child. Just be professional and speak to him and say to him, listen, calm down. If I've got it wrong, got it, but don't just go yellow card and then go yellow card and act. Go on, get off. Go on that way, as if to say, go on. It's just amateurish. And this is supposedly the best league in the world. But the referees, and I'll say it again, poor with a capital P.
Yeah, they're getting worse, mate, the referees in the Premier League. I really believe that the referee standard this year has been absolutely dreadful. And I had hope that when Howard Webb took over, the standard would get better again. And I think it's been dreadful this year.
It's gone backwards.
And, yeah, 100%. But also, if that happens on the 60th minute and he sends off Dalot, that's a big problem for United. Whereas, you know, as it was like injury time, didn't really matter. But that could, you know, that could have changed the game.
When you said that before, who you support shouldn't come into the equation for your professional referee.
But the reason I asked you is there's a big long thread on Twitter where it shows the decisions that he's made or got wrong or like sent people off, but big decisions which have been in favour of Newcastle, if you kind of look at it in terms of, you know, against Liverpool, Man City, Arsenal, United, there's a very clear sort of path of these sort of big decisions. And people have kind of pointed the finger and saying, well, that's because he's a Newcastle fan. But I don't necessarily think that was the case with this. I just think, that, like you say, his emotions and it's just an ego thing, and that you don't like being shouted at. And he just got a bit, he was just a bit petulant himself, almost, you know?
Yeah.
Didn't like it.
Cringeworthy. Because it's not professional. Yeah.
Well, I think when he probably watched it afterwards, he probably felt even more stupid because he got the original throw-in wrong, which is why Dalot loses his head. He loses his temper because he got the decision bad, like, he got it wrong. So we're going to do our Premier League predictions now in a minute. We're going to go through the Premier League games and have a little talk about the ifs and the buts of the Premier League. If anyone's got any questions, by the way, you can get them in. And Rodri, as always, will answer them, as he always does, in good old-fashioned brutal honesty. That's what I meant. If you've got any questions or anything, then send them in. We're going to be finishing shortly. The Instagram stream, I think, finishes automatically on an hour. So if we disappear from Instagram, come and jump over onto YouTube or Twitter, because but we normally go about an hour anyway, so we should be about right. What I wanted to do, mate, if anyone asks any questions, I'll put them to you. But what I want to do is do the predictions a little bit earlier in the show and actually talk about the individual games as we kind of do our predictions at the same time. Because, you know, we're professionals at the end of the day. Your year for your analysis. Just remember that. Your year for your tactical knowledge. But, yeah, these referees, mate, are shocking, and it's getting tiresome, you know? I'm getting bored of it. It's just the same thing every week. The referees are the centre of attention. And I think the thing which bugs everyone, all football fans, is consistency. And like I said, if he had booked Nunes twice and sent him off earlier in the game, and then Dalot does that, you can go, all right, it's stupid, but it's consistent. You know what I mean? Like, but when you've let that go, 3-4 different incidents in the space of a minute, you can't then do that. And even, you know, from Dalot's point of view, once he gets booked, he's got to shut up. Like, you've got to be a professional yourself. And, like, you know that there's this big thing on dissent and the rest of it. So it's like, once you get the yellow card for dissent, you got to literally put your arms down, shut your mouth, and get on with it. And he doesn't. But ultimately, I think the referee's got to do better than myself. But right. The first game up in our Premier League or our weekend preview is Spurs versus Everton. Spurs have won their last two on the bounce after having had a bit of a rocky spell. But Everton, the form team, have won four of the last five, beating teams such as Newcastle, Chelsea, Forest, West Ham, and drew with Fulham last week. I'm going to go with 2-1 to Everton. I've been very impressed with Everton, not just the, you know, winning, but the way they've done it, the football they played, even against United, way back when Garnacho scores that early worldie.
So what score are you going for?
I'm going 2-1 Everton.
2-1, I've got the other way.
Okay. Tell me why.
Tottenham at home. It looked like they've turned the corner again and going to kick on again. And yeah,
Tottenham. What do you thought of Everton's run, mate?
Plus they're at home, which is a main. No, it's a big crowd. They play well at home. I know Everton are in a good form, but yeah, just being at home. If it was at Everton, I'd put Everton. It's just at home is the advantage for me.
What have you made of Everton's improvements? Like, you watched them against United. I thought they played quite well against United and maybe were a little bit unlucky that, you know, Garnacho scores a once-in-a-lifetime goal. Like, what have you made of Everton's improvements since they got the point deduction?
Well, they were playing well before they got the points deduction, and that's obviously just lit a spark, and they've gone from strength to strength. Obviously, they're getting used to the manager as well, getting used to playing with each other, and yeah, they're just getting better and better each week.
Already, from that point deduction, they're already up to 16th and out of the relegation zone, which I think is, you know, fair play. That is impressive. The one thing which has interested me with Everton is, like, the point deduction 100% has galvanised them, hasn't it? Like, they've clearly got that almost Fergie-esque, you know, siege mentality. Everyone's against us. The Premier League's trying to stitch us up. You know, it's us against the world sort of thing. And it's working for them. Like you said, they were already in good form. And that deduction is almost just, you know, giving them that extra lift and togetherness. Although today, that Amadou Onana has been heavily linked with United again, the midfielder. Would you take him at United? Do you think he's good enough?
I don't see enough of him.
Amadou Onana, he's the big, he's massive, he is. He's a big black guy, plays in, like, not holding midfielder, like box to box, I guess.
Who?
For Everton. No. You would have seen him, but
I know what you mean. Yeah, no, what's it? No.
I don't think he's good enough, but he's been linked with him for a while. So there's obviously something to it, but yeah, I don't think he's what they need. Or he might be good, but he's certainly not what they need at the moment, if that makes sense. Next up is Luton Town versus Newcastle. Obviously, Luton will be without their club captain, Tom Locklear, who, as he recovers. I've gone 2-0 Newcastle, but just talking about some of the form, Luton have lost 4 of the last 5.
They played against the top sides.
Yeah, they lost to United, Arsenal, Man City and Brentford in that time, and they beat Palace. However, Newcastle...
All the games have been really, really tight. They've been impressed with Luton. So I'm going to go 1-0.
They have, they've been high scoring as well.
1-0, home win.
Interesting. I've gone Newcastle 2-0, but Newcastle have lost 3 of the last 5. So, you know, they're not... Newcastle aren't flying, shall we say.
They'll go there, the right mentality, Luke, will turn over because they've been impressing me there, especially at Kenilworth Road.
Yeah, and I think the one thing with Newcastle recently is they have looked tired where they haven't had, you know, where they've got these injuries, they haven't got the same depth that some other clubs have got, and they've kind of struggled a little bit, you know. It's I can see that. I'm thinking of changing to a Luton win, you know.
No.
Ooh, I'm going to go 2-1 to Newcastle. Next up is Forest versus Bournemouth. Nottingham Forest sacked Cooper this week. Were you surprised by that?
No, because the owner's flaky. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
I think he'll be the next Wales manager myself on
I
Cooper.
I think he'll be the next Crystal Palace manager myself, but do I know?
You know, Palace got a habit.
Yeah, speak to Roy, say, Roy, come on, you've done a great job for us, but can Steve take over now? Because he's going to be here for the future, and
Yeah, I could see that. I think it'll come down to which job becomes available first, I guess, because I think if the Wales job comes up, I think he probably is hot favourite for that.
He's too young for the Wales job, no?
No, I don't think so, mate. I don't know. I mean, maybe, but. I mean, how old was Sparky when he took it? Probably similar age, wasn't he?
True.
And that was what kickstarted in
He's already done that though. He's already got a good. reputation. So he doesn't need to go do that. He does that. He could do that in 15 years. And he's got that Premier League. He's a Premier League manager now. If he goes back to that, is it going backwards?
I don't know. I guess it depends if that's his ultimate goal as a, proud Welshman. Sure.
In my mind, if I was him, I'm thinking, in 10 years' time, the Wales manager job is still going to be about next time, if I'm available.
I could see the logic to, like, I could definitely see what you're saying, but I guess if his ultimate goal is
all about time, I suppose, isn't it?
Yeah.
If he's out of a job and the Wales manager's free, then he's definitely going to think about it, isn't it?
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense in many ways. And I think, look, as a Welsh fan, take him, be happy with him as a manager, being very impressed with him. Forest versus Bournemouth, though, mate. Do we get the new manager bounce straight away from Forest, or do you think it'll take a couple of weeks for Nunes to get his thing going?
I'm going to go draw there because Bournemouth have been playing pretty well as well.
Yeah, Bournemouth have been absolutely flying, mate, haven't they? And obviously they beat United 3-0. Yeah. Most recently,
Brighton 1-0 up. Jordan Ayew.
Oh, there you go. I've gone 3-1 Bournemouth in that one. Next up is Fulham at home to Burnley. Both got kind of similar form. Fulham won 2 of the last 5, but have picked up victories against teams they probably should beat. Lost to Newcastle and Liverpool, drew with Everton, whereas Burnley lost to Everton, drew with Brighton, lost with Wolves, and beat Sheffield United. Burnley need points, but I think Fulham's form at home has been pretty solid. So I've gone 2-1 Fulham for me. Been very impressed with Fulham this year.
2-1 Fulham.
Copy of me? Interesting.
No. I'm just saying that was just repeating you.
Oh, right. I see. Okay.
2-1 Fulham. What have I gone? 2-0 Fulham.
Okay. Interesting. Next up, we go drop down to the Championship for a rare Super 6 prediction, which is nice. We've got
3-0 the Foxes. Was it the Tigers?
I got 3-0. I noticed that you got that in quick before I could get mine in.
Well, I said it first, so you've got to change it.
I've got to change mine now, is it? I'll go 4-1 Leicester. Just because, don't want to copy you, do I? That would be disastrous.
I was brave enough to say it first. You need to be
brave enough.
Yeah.
You're so brave, mate. You tell your truth, mate. That's
and the next
thing.
Game, I'll go in first as well.
Hang on a minute. We've got to talk about Leicester's form. Won 4 of the last 5. Rotherham have lost 4 of the last 5. So I think it's going to be... I think everyone's expecting a big Leicester win, aren't they? Ultimately. And it'll come down to whether Rotherham can get something going. But that Championship, mate, is wild. Like, you wouldn't be surprised. I can't see Rotherham getting anything.
Premier League quality strong, don't they? In areas still. That stuff. So, yeah. 3-0 home win.
4-1 home win. Liverpool versus Arsenal 1-1.
Yeah, 1-1.
Copying me again. Outrageous.
I'll change that. Could be 0-0.
You do think it's going to be a draw, though, mate?
Could be 0-0, could be 1-1, could be 2. It's going to be close. It's going to be 1-1.
Liverpool picked up an impressive victory this in the midweek in the EFL Cup. But I don't think it makes a lot of difference because it's the fringe players. So yeah. I don't think you get the city. Like, if it was a Premier League game, I'd say, all right, that may make a difference. I'll tell you what I was very disappointed with in the United game the other day was that Szoboszlai. I thought he was really poor. Like, his touch.
Oh, yesterday, though.
He scored a rocket yesterday, didn't he?
Mm.
But he gave the ball away so much, mate, in that United game. And, he was surprisingly poor, actually. Okay, so 1-1. Do you expect... Like, I know Arsenal fans in particular will be eyeing this game as if they can win it. That'll be a signal they're going to win the title. And you don't win anything in December, is what I say. But is this year going to finally be Arsenal's year, mate?
No.
And if they were to go and beat Liverpool comfortably on the weekend, would you change
that? You just answered your own statement with your sentence you said before you started this. nothing's give out in December. I've never seen a League One in December.
That's very true. But I'm asking you, if they were to put in a particularly impressive victory, would that change your view? Well, of...
they're ultimately not the ones they're going to be fighting against. It'd be Manchester City.
Very true, mate. Very true. Who do you think are the men to watch in that game? Who could be the game changers?
Saka, Martinelli.
Anyone from the Scouts contingent?
Salah and Endo. Look out for Endo.
He's good, play, good little player. I mean, isn't he? I like him.
Yeah.
He's quite impressed with his work rate. We're going to have to keep talking a minute, mate, because my screen's just all frozen, so I can't. I can't end the show. So
I was trying to end it before like 60 minutes, but you've already nosed that up.
I can't because my screen's just frozen. It should be fine now. Just give me 30 seconds to catch up. What did you make of Paddy the Baddy's performance on the weekend, mate?
And I watched it today, actually, because I was off work today, so I watched it today. Yeah, dominant.
Well, both of them, I thought, were very, very dominant.
Leon Edwards, dominant. I wish he'd caved his fucking head in that cold blood performance and he does my head in. But, yeah, dominant performance, domination by the British in America.
I thought they were both very impressive. And, like I think I said to you before, Paddy he's a really sound lad, but like his abilities, mate, in the grappling and wrestling, like people, particularly like American MMA fans and analysts, they just write the British off as if they don't know what grappling is. And like Paddy the Baddy is high level.
Because Tony Ferguson.
Yeah, he's a good grappler, mate. His chin might have gone, but he as a grappler Edwards, and
Colby Cummins is a really top high wrestler, and he grappled with him.
Mate, when he took him down just because he could, I loved that, mate, because he had dominated him for I think it was like 3 or 4 rounds, and it was very one sided, and then when he just took him down as well, I was like, go on, son.
Who've you got this weekend?
That's a very good
question.
Who have
you got this weekend?
Who have I got?
AJ.
Is that this weekend, is it?
Yeah. Come on, Bert.
Of course it is. It's the 23rd. They've got Christmas, mate. Coming fast. Do you think he wins then, yeah?
AJ, yeah.
Against Otto Wallin.
Is that Jarrell Miller as well? He's Daniel Dubois.
Daniel Dubois, Miller will be a fight.
A few heavyweights, there'll be a few bangers. Someone's
That Dubois fight will be. I predict that'll just be like toe to toe,
slugfest,
smashing each other up. Yeah, I think that'll be a good fight. But
I've
got a feeling Joshua might lose, mate.
Yeah,
well, he shouldn't.
You mean taking his eye off the ball?
He said. Andy Joshua's words, I'm here to fight, not party. But look.
We'll have to wait and see, right? Money. We're over that.
Go and have a good one, mate. I'll
get some chocolate eclairs. I want some chocolate eclairs.
Oh, that sounds good. Nice. Right. Have a good one, mate. Thank you for your time, as always. And I'll speak to you soon.
In a bit, motherfucker.
Sports Social Podcast Network.